we're going to go because we've got we've still got a number of unidentified callers, but we need to get started. I think what would be best is if we go around and do a number of introductions, since we have a lot of new folks on the call today. And when I ask who you are, if you could give just a quick 2 to 3 sentence summary of who you are, the organization that you're with, and why you're interested in the call, that would be good. Keep in mind that we want to get through this pretty quickly so we can get to Anil's introduction on the DHS blockchain project. Maria, would you mind going first?
I'm with Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab. I'm the technical lead for Anil John's DHS, S&T, Identity Management, and Privacy Research Projects.
Fantastic. Anil, would you mind introducing yourself?
Certainly. My name is Anil John. I am the Science and Technology Director of the Department of Homeland Security. I manage two programs, the Identity Management R&D Program and the Data Privacy R&D Program.
Fantastic. Thank you. Daryl, please go next.
This is Daryl Duane. I'm with Accelerate Technologies, and we're one of the awardees of the SBIR, the Trust Elevation.
Great. Chain. Thank you. Greg, you next. Greg Kellogg. You might be muted. Can't hear you. Skipping to Bill DiLorenzo.
Yeah, good morning. This is Bill DiLorenzo, and I'm with Credit Trust Technologies.
Right. And what does the Credit Trust do?
The Credit Trust is in the business of developing platforms for creating digital credentials and processing related processing services in various vertical segments, and we're in the process of rolling out new platform and products and services in this area.
Great. Thank you. Rob Trainer and Alex Romero are also with the Credit Trust. I'm going to skip you guys just in the interest of time. I'm also going to skip the folks from Digital Bazaar. That's myself, Dave Longley, and Dave Lane. We're doing a bunch of identity stuff and have been organizing some of the work in this group for a while now. Dan Burnett, please go next.
Basically I do a variety of standards work, most recently WebRTC and Voice XML and related standards within W3C, and also related stuff in IETF.
Thank you. Anita Brady.
Anita Brady with Oracle Corporation. I'm in the Financial Services Global Business Unit. I'm participating today out of general interest in education.
Thank you. Jason Weaver.
I'm Jason Weaver. I'm the Director of Digital Credential Strategy with Parchment, and Parchment is an academic credential exchange.
202 area code, 202-319-7435. Who are you? Anonymous. Carrie, please go next.
Hey, good morning. I'm Carrie Lemoy from Open Works Group. We do ed tech technology work, like developing work. Also, Open Badges contributor and a member of the badge team. We can get badges on the blockchain.
Great, thank you. Colleen Kennedy.
Yes, Colleen Kennedy with Pearson. We work with the Acclaim Badges team, and so I'm representing Matt Stone for how we can use this.
Great, thank you. Christopher Allen.
Yes, I'm Christopher Allen. I'm principal architect at the blockchain sidechain company Blockstream. I'm chair of the Hyperledger Working Group and involved with a number of the Hyperledger Identity Working Group, and a member of a variety of other standards organizations. I'm advisor to ID 2020 and host of the Rebooting Web of Trust workshops, which we just finished one this weekend.
Wonderful, thank you. I'll look you next. Alok, you might be muted. Can't hear you. 609 area code, 609-734. Who's that?
That's me. That's me, Manu. Richard Varn. I work at Educational Testing Service, where I work on converting our high-stakes and low-stakes assessment score reports into digital credentials, the background of being a public CIO and a legislator and CIO in the federal, state, local educational arena, and been working on credentials and documenting outcomes in education for about 30 years. That's me.
Fantastic. Thank you. Carla Casilli.
Hi, everybody. It's Carla Casilli. I am working with the Connecting Credentials folks, looking at credentials across a variety of environments, and then also working with BadgeChain and coming from the Open Badges environment.
Thank you. Shane.
Hi, I'm Shane McCarron with SpecOps. I've been involved with W3C for 20 years or so, and in this space, SpecOps is specifically chartered to help accelerate the development of standards in this area, so we're here sort of wearing that hat.
Thanks, Shane. 860 area code, 860-836, who's that?
Manu, that's me. That's Wayne Vaughn from Tyrion.
Okay.
We're a blockchain technology company, and I also authored a protocol called Chainpoint, which is very much related to the goals of the verifiable claims work group. And I also participated in the Rebooting Web for Trust, or ID 2020 Design Workshop this weekend in New York.
Great, fantastic. Thank you, Wayne. Welcome, everyone that's new. We're actually missing probably around 6 or 7 people from the call today due to various conferences, so this isn't everyone, but hopefully everyone can see that we're starting to get a really fantastic critical mass of people from a variety of different industries. I'm going to ask about agenda next. So today we have a packed agenda. Anil John is going to introduce us to the DHS blockchain R&D projects that are going on right now. We need to get a recap of the United Nations ID 2020 Summit, recap of the Rebooting Web of Trust Design Workshop. I believe Christopher Allen said that he wants to add some stuff on the Vermont legal frameworks for identity stuff, so we'll add that after that. And then we need to get an update on the work items. Clearly, we're not going to be able to get through all of this today, so we are going to front load the call with as many of our new guests as possible and let them say a couple of things about what they're working on and how it might relate to the work we're doing here. Does anyone have any updates or changes to the agenda that are very high priority for this week? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to Anil. Anil, if you could please give us some background on the DHS blockchain R&D project, kind of where it's coming from, and what you're hoping will come out of it, that would be great. Over to you, Anil.
Thank you, Manu. Good morning, everyone. On for folks who are calling in from different time zones, I wish you good X in whatever time zone it is in your area. Just stepping back, DHS Science and Technology Directorate is a science advisor to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. My charter within the programs that I manage is to look 1 to 5 years out and to ensure that our customers are not surprised by what comes down the line. As you all know, there is a significant amount of what I would call, to use Alan Greenspan's words, irrational exuberance around blockchain. So the DHS interest, DHS S&T is my program interest in blockchain technology is actually not, is actually quite the reverse. It is actually, I, as a program manager in this area, and also as somebody who has been in the identity and security field for some time, I'm actually a skeptic when it comes to blockchain technology. So, in effect, the call for proposals that we put out there is to get at the root of what blockchain can do. In particular, if you are in the identity attribute space, there are a fundamental set of technologies and concepts that need to be proven out in order to make it real. These are, in the security arena, everything from the standard CIA triad, confidentiality, integrity, availability to provenance, non-repudiation, and on the privacy side, equally as important, things like selective disclosure, pseudonymity, and things of that nature. The intent of the call for a project that we put out there was to show whether or not those fundamental building blocks for both security and privacy, how they could be implemented or if they could be implemented using blockchain technology, and even more important, whether it makes sense to do so. So as part of it, we've awarded four separate companies, Digital Bazaar, Respect Network, Accelerate, and North Technologies. Each of them have a different path to what they want to build out, but each of them also is on that path, also building out and trying to prove the things that we just talked about. Can they actually do it and implement the security and privacy aspects of what we all take for granted in the identity arena on the blockchain itself? Now, if that turns out to be true, there is a set of things that becomes open, and that big if is what we're trying to do here. DHS obviously is an authoritative source for a variety of claims and attributes, whether it is within the U.S. contact, the U.S. verify, your eligibility to work, within the context of first responder attributes, that's a shared responsibility between DHS, FEMA, as well as state and local first responders as well. There is a potential use within that use case, but I'm not going there, and I'm not going to be recommending that to my customers who are the components without having that foundational piece proved or disproven. And my hope is by the companies that are working on this problem, they will basically either give us an answer or tell us that we need to go and find something else to spend our time on. And that is the interest that DHS S&T currently has in the blockchain technology, and why we are particularly funding that set of projects. Anil, I'll turn it back over to you at this point in time.
Great. Thank you, Anil. For those that are new to the call, if you're in the chat channel, you can type Q, the letter Q, and plus, and that will put you on the speaker queue, and we will basically go down the speaker queue. The speaker queue is if people have questions, or if they want to ask Anil a question, if you have general comments on it, please put yourself on the speaker queue. So Dave Longley just demonstrated how to do that there. I'm going to put myself on the speaker queue. Please add yourself if you have questions around DHS's blockchain initiative or anything like that. Okay, so
I don't have access to the chat. If there are questions that are popping up that you would like me to answer, if you could call them out, I would appreciate it.
Will do, absolutely. I will be tracking the queue and raising them. Also, if you don't want to speak or if you can't, you can type it out in the chat channel. If you're not on the chat channel, just speak up and we'll put you on the queue. Okay, first question, Anil. Can you talk a bit more about, so everyone in this group is trying to figure out what the architecture for an identity ecosystem, like a self-sovereign identity ecosystem, user-centric identity system would be like. And we're also trying to translate that into international specifications that could potentially be taken through the W3C process. Could you let us know what your thoughts are on kind of how standards fit into all of this? Are you looking for market first products to jump into the ecosystem first, or are you looking for standards first or some hybrid of the two?
So I actually do not have a clear answer. That I think this is a conversation that I know that some of the people who are on the self-sovereign intrinsic identity side of the house I think they've heard this pitch from me before. I do think that there is a natural, from the perspective of my concern in general is there is a drive in general in order to, everybody agrees that there is value in individuals controlling their information, their data, and their ability to assert, whatever you define as identity, whether it is a collection of attributes within a particular context, or if it is an identifier, or a variety of other things. My comment to that has always been great, but in general, you always have to, the adoption or lack thereof in the space has always been driven by the imbalance in power between the asserters of information and the relying parties and the consumers of the information, whereby the consumption side of the house has an immense amount of power in either rejecting or accepting that. So what that basically means to me is that if you want them to do it, if you want those people to accept your self-sovereign identity or any other type of identity, it needs to be vouched for and trusted. It needs to be vouched for by an entity that the relying party trusts. And what I've not seen in the space is an effort to basically address that particular point, but more of an effort to basically let's actually create a identity production thing. We've done that before with SAML. We've done that before with OpenID Connect. Large-scale federations die or fall by die or survive based on the acceptance side of the house. So from my point, the authoritative nature of the claims and how you prove that authoritative nature is going to be a critical thing that needs to be addressed if you want success, whether it is blockchain or some other technology.
Great. Thank you, Anil. Are there any other are there any questions for Anil? I don't see anyone on the queue.
Manu, this is Ari Levy Cohen. I'm sorry, I'm not in a place where I can add myself to the queue, but I do have a comment on the self-sovereign identity control comment that Anil just made, if it's okay for me to make
a
comment.
Absolutely, go ahead.
Okay, so, with regards to self-sovereign identity and your comments about, well, that's fine and good for we, the people, to have control over our identity, I mean, I'm sure that there are regulatory and sort of governmental reasons for why not relinquishing control over the people's identity to the people themselves might be an issue. But isn't that solved somehow with an elegant layer of permissioning depending on the circumstance?
I would say that it is, and my apologies for jumping in as well. I agree with you. I think at a higher level, it is irrelevant to somebody who is trusting an assertion. Irrelevant is too strong of a word, but it is less relevant where it is generated from, but more from the perspective that somebody is standing behind it, that the relying party, the consumer of that assertion can trust. And I think that is a piece that needs to be addressed, whether it is through, whatever mechanism that you put into place. I think that was the point that I was stressing in that seems to be lost in the noise.
And let me jump in really quickly. I think part of the issue that we've always had in this group is terminology. But we've heard enough different terminology throughout the years. I think to understand that what Anil is saying is something that we hold to be true in this group, meaning that the consumers of these credentials really need to be able to trust the issuer. And some of that trust might be dynamic. Some consumers will trust a different set of issuers from another set of consumers. I think what Ari is saying, we really should be trying for user-centric / self-sovereign design here, and that could be a part of the solution. I think we're all kind of headed in the same direction. The details are still a bit fuzzy, but I see this as a good sign, right? I mean, we're starting to kind of gain momentum in a certain direction. So that's good.
Manu, I slightly disagree with what you just said, and let me just point out the point of disagreement. I'm not saying that the person who issues the claims, attributes, whatever, might very well be distinct and separate from a person that basically is vouching for them on behalf of the person. My point is that I think, my point in general was that it is irrelevant to me who is the issuer, whether it is the individual, whether it is a organization, whether it is a some large entity or small entity. What is important is who is standing behind it. It doesn't necessarily need to be the same entity. But the key there is that whoever is standing behind it need to be trusted by the consumer, the consumption side of the house.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Sorry, I was not clear. I think there's a lot of alignment on that point that you just made, Anil. Fantastic. Anyone else would like to? Are there any other comments or questions on either the Department of Homeland Security initiative and how blockchain is related, or anything that Anil or Ari have said? Okay, if not, there's also quite a bit of discussion that's going on in the IRC channel, so folks will want to take a look at that as well. Alok, you're on the queue. Go ahead, Alok.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, sorry about that. So I just have one clarification here that I'm looking for, which is the point that Anil just made. I don't think that's related to technology, right?
No,
it's kind of the blockchain.
It's somewhat related, but it could
in
be
what
viewed
way?
As technology agnostic.
Right. I mean, I think the question of whether we support the notion that Anil brought up is separate from if we were to support that notion, then what technology we use for it. And which technology is better to use for, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's
okay.
That's part of the technical work, that we're going to be doing, or we have been doing over the last year and a half, and we'll continue to do for the next couple of years.
Okay. Thank you. Just one other clarification. Appreciate it.
Great. Anyone else want to be on the queue? If not, we're going to move on, and we have to pretty soon. Okay. There are a couple of folks that joined. I want to make sure that we track those folks. 434 area code, who's that?
Hi, sorry, I was on mute. This is Jen Barron.
Jen, how do you spell your last name?
B as in boy, E-H-R-E-N-S, Barron.
Great, Jen. What brings you here? Which organization are you with, and what's your interest in the group?
I am with one of the groups that is working on Anil's blockchain SBIR. I'm the privacy SME that's working on it.
Okay, great. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
857 area code, who's that? Nine one seven area code, who's that? No, one of these is Ari. 571 area code, who's that?
I'm the 917, Manu. 692-6999, that's me. I'm 917-692-6999.
Sorry, identify, please.
I was just confirming, Manu, that Ari, my number is 917-692-6999.
I'm sorry, Ari. I couldn't. Great, thank
you.
No
worries.
And Alex Oberhauser, CTO of Cambridge Blockchain. Hi, welcome to the call. Let me make sure to get you down here. Alex, would you mind giving a real quick intro just so people can hear your voice?
Hi, my name is Alex. I'm the CTO of Camus Blockchain. We are developing an identity way of blockchain based.
Great, fantastic.
That's about my
call.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, next up is the United Nations ID 2020 Summit Recap. Oh, I'm hold on. Dave Longley's on the queue. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak to the last subject just briefly, because we were talking about how the technology may or may not have anything to do with effectively separating who's making an assertion of a claim and who's presenting that claim. And I just wanted to point out that the technology that we've been working on in this group is fundamentally different from service-centric architectures, where the service presenting the claim is effectively the same entity as the one that's making the claim. Instead, we have strongly decoupled making the assertion from those who present the assertion. So that's actually been kind of a focus on the technology that we've been trying to build out.
Good point. Hey, Christopher, I'm just giving you a heads up. Sorry, I'm giving you like a 20-second heads up. Do you want to do the United Nations ID 2020 Summit recap?
Or sure do.
Like me to attend? Okay, go
yep,
ahead.
I'm ready. Okay, so I just put a Twitter status that if you go to, you can actually see my slides. So there basically were nine parts of the ID 2020 event. So first off is that it was at the United Nations, which is a big deal. We had ambassadors and policymakers, et cetera, there. And the goal was sort of to bring together sort of the legal governance side of things, aka the legal code, to the technologists who have software code and allow sort of a paradigm switch of and language sharing and public-private partnerships, et cetera, with the large goal of really leaving no one behind to provide legal identity for all is a UN mission. They want to do it by 2030. I forgot the exact number, 16.9, I think, or maybe it's 19.6, but in any case, they have a goal to do that, and they want to leave no one behind. They want partnerships with technologists, and they need innovation. So, the next slide is the call to action. We need to really do a lot of education. There's some interesting opportunities in blockchain, but we need to be careful about it. We need policy commitments. You know, there's an element of just going out and doing it and harnessing, you know, the willingness to help and, you know, balancing short-term and long-term needs. So slide three, what can get in the way? Obviously, there's a variety of risks. A variety of blockchain, things have been pushed out there, but we have to protect communities. We have to be careful not to create new problems. We don't want to become, the digital colonialists into these worlds. We need to figure out what is the appropriate role of governments. Lots of individual challenges around adoption. The next slide was specific problems with identity. There's a lot of things going on with carriers. There's a lot of people who don't have voice. Identity power is tilted toward the first world. We don't want to impose those values. There's a lot of issues in the financial sector. We want to both give people access, but we also want to protect people. There are a lot of different kind of information rights and records and whatever. We have to be careful. On the next slide, we talked about what's the next panel, is what is the reality. You know, we have 10 million stateless people in the world, 1.5 billion people who don't have citizenship. You know, how do we do this? How do we handle refugees? How do we handle voters? We need a unified vision. We have to be, you know, we also do have to be careful in regards to things as far as the, you know, we can do such a good job that it also makes it easier to weaponize identity. So the next slide was the call to action. You know, it's possible, we can do it. We had a lunch group results was the next one, where we talked about best practices and, you know, what is the role of biometrics, et cetera, and there was a further thing. The next slide was what tech can do to make this a reality. We really want individual freedom, people to take control of their destiny. I was quite pleased to hear an ambassador use the term self-sovereign identity. It was seemed to be a meme that was repeated a number of different times. You know, what we want to do is something that is, you know, flexible. But again, we need to be careful to not be techno-colonialists. And I think there was one more slide. I've missed a slide. But in any case, I think that's a good summary. The event was very much a high-level overview. There was not, you know, there was opportunity for discussions and meeting and networking, but certainly not an opportunity for creating specific initiatives or specific, you know, documents or proclamations or things of that nature. But it was a great start. I believe they want to do another one a year from now. And we also, I use this as an opportunity to lead into the weekend conference, which was the Rebooting Web of Trust.
Great. Thank you, Christopher. And that Rebooting Web of Trust workshop is our next item up. But before we go on, I wanted to underscore how kind of deeply moving this event was. It was about people that are the most vulnerable on this planet, and it was about how identity and identifiers were one of the things that could help. And so tying it, tying the work that we're doing here to people in refugee camps that could potentially use a lot of these technologies that we're talking about here to make their life better. Was deeply important and moving, and two, we were able to make contact with a number of people that are on the ground in these refugee camps, also a number of people that are trying to prevent human trafficking and view identity as a way of reducing it. We have access to a number of people that are doing that now, whereas before we didn't, right? So both in the web payments work and in the credentials work, I know a number of people in this group care deeply about trying to help people in vulnerable positions, but we have not been able to focus on it because we couldn't verify that what we theorize or what we think the technology should do will actually be helpful. So we were able to make contact with people that are, on the ground trying to help, and hopefully we'll be able to kind of tighten up that feedback loop so we do end up building something that could help reduce human trafficking and help ensure that, refugees have a better life as a result of some of the stuff that we're doing. Anil, I don't know if you wanted to reflect a bit on the event or if you want us to move on.
It's just that I think it was an event. I found it was remarkable in that there were three particular communities, obviously, that were represented there. There was a policymakers, there was a whole bunch of technologists, very heavy on the on the blockchain front, and obviously a set of people with deep pockets. I look forward to seeing how the problem that supposedly brought them all together will motivate them towards a common goal, because I was heartbroken by the challenge and the issue, but I was not overly enthusiastic about what came out of it other than a massive networking event. So I am looking forward to what the next steps are.
Well said. Brian Sletton, you're on the queue.
I was just curious if the negative side of tracking and identification came up as a concern.
Absolutely. In fact, that became a big part of the discussion at the Rebooting Web of Trust / ID 2020 design workshop. So to give you an example, a number of folks in Syrian refugee camps that work in Syrian refugee camps, work in refugee camps that have Syrians in them, have said that, you know, many Syrians do not want their picture to be taken or for them to be videotaped because they still have family back home in Syria. And if there was a way to identify them, or if they exposed their identity, or if the technological solution exposed their identity, that would be a way for people that want to do harm to their family back home, the people that did not get out, that could you know, create a terrible event, right? So absolutely there was focus on, you know, tracking and the dangers that come with that. Christopher, you're on the queue next.
Yeah, just, you know, something that, again, you know, fed into the next day, but, you know, there has to be some better understanding on the ground. Apparently there are these not very nice, but warm places to sleep in Calais, but it requires a handprint in order to enter, and people would rather sleep in the mud and the cold than use the handprint because of a general fear of the identity technology. So, you know, we really need to understand these types of things at all levels.
Absolutely. Any questions or concerns before we move on to the next topic? All right. So next up is going to be you again, Christopher. There was an event directly after the ID 2020 event called the ID 2020 Design Workshop. It also has been called the Rebooting Web of Trust Design Workshop. Christopher has been kind of putting these together over the last year. So Christopher, if you could give us kind of an introduction to the purpose of the workshop and then kind of what we did after ID 2020, that'd be great.
Sure. So we have complete documents for the capture the photos, white walls, etc. But the basic goal of a design workshop is to have a facilitated discussion and to create output that can be then iterated upon by the community over time. So our goal was to have at least 5 white papers result out of the conference, and you know, obviously we have a lot of the other benefits of bringing people and ideas and such together. You will see at the link there's a variety of advanced readings. All the participants were asked to post a topic reading for other people to read to kind of give people context and focus. Then we basically did a report out about the results from our last conference and ID 2020 to make sure everybody was kind of on the same page. We then went through an exercise to kind of imagine what 2031 would be like. So we had 41 some odd people draw on the walls their vision of the future, and then get together in groups of 5 to share those visions, but also look at the differences in the language issues and places where people disagreed and such. But by the middle of the first day, we were diving directly into topics. You know, I know that Manu got together with Wayne and within, you know, an hour or so had addressed a number of differences between their proof of publication approaches, and that looks like that's going to move forward. Other, projects were brought up. And in the end, I think we'll probably have around 8 or 9 white papers or specifications or whatever come out of this particular design shop over the next couple of weeks as people have a chance to massage the information. I'd love to have some of the other people that were here, that were at the design shop to say what it was like from their side. But I felt very positive about it and some real good results in decentralized identifiers, how are they going to work, an architecture of self-sovereign identity, some real interesting use cases, some new ways of thinking about identity. I think the identity as correlation is a fascinating way of thinking about things. So a lot of really good things. I'll close there.
Great. Thanks. Wayne, not to put you on the spot, but to put you on the spot, any thoughts on the design workshop?
It was a great workshop. There was about, I don't know, 40 or 50 people there, and a lot of familiar faces for me of tech founders and CTOs and lead engineers from startups in the New York City area. And, you know, we were able to sit down, and I had brought a new version of something called a chain point protocol. A chain point is just a protocol for anchoring data in the blockchain. It allows you to create a verifiable proof of the timestamp and content of any object, you know, file, audit trail, series of communications, etc. And it's very much related to the work that Manu has been doing with the proof of publication in the verifiable claims work group. And so we all sat down, and it was kind of funny. We had taken a previous version of the chain point format and converted to JSON-LD, and Manu had done the same. And it turns out that they were extremely similar to each other. There was only a handful of fields that were different, so we were very close. But within about an hour and a half, we just kind of went through the entire specification, and were able to have an outcome where nothing was absolutely definitive, but it was clear that we were all moving along the same path, and that we were it's a very clear path forward for being able to create at least a standard that we can propose.
Great. Thank you, Wayne. So that's an example of just one of the breakout sessions that happened. I think there were probably around 30 of them that happened, all around, you know, self-sovereign identity and a variety of different topics. So things like, so we discussed, one of the breakouts was the verifiable claims architecture that we've been working on here. We kind of presented it to the group, and then a breakout group, you know, without me involved at all, got together and talked about the architecture and kind of reworked it to match kind of what they thought the architecture would be. And there was a huge amount of overlap there. Similarly, there were a number of discussions around decentralized identifiers and how we can perhaps link these to various blockchains. So there was a deep technical expertise from each one of these blockchain companies talking about how we could build the verifiable claims requirement of having a decentralized identifier and associating it with various blockchains and doing proof of publication and things of that nature. So Christopher's going next. I'll let him kind of cover what he was going to say. But I cannot underscore how deeply technical the people in the room were. I would even go as far as saying they have deeper technical expertise in implementing this stuff than this group has. And that's saying something, because we've got some pretty heavy hitters in this group as well. So the two things I think that have direct impact to the verifiable claims group is that people looked at the architecture and they didn't throw it out. They looked at it and they said, this is good enough to kind of do a next iteration on. So that was good. And we're going to have those folks come to this group and kind of present. One of those people is the person that did the initial set of specs that became email, the unified email mechanism that we have now. And he's also, his name's Dave Crocker. He's also the guy that did kind of a first pass at our domain name system that we depend on, right? So, you know, add that to folks like Christopher Allen, who's just, you know, spoken that did TLS, and we have some real heavy hitters associated with this work now. The other thing that came out of it is that there was another breakout group that took the use cases, the verifiable claims use cases, six of them, and they did a review of it. So this was six people that had never really seen them before, and they went through and did a full review of it, and they came up with a bunch of really good comments. So they're going to try and get those comments back into this group. We're going to try to invite them into the group and talk about what changes they'd like to have made to the use cases. So this is, you know, really great stuff that came out of the design workshop. Christopher, I'm sorry, I jumped Q on you. Go ahead, Christopher.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to close to say, there's going to be a blockchain, W3C blockchain meetup at the end of June. Some of the items that we did, we're hoping to continue to revise them at that conference. And then it appears so far from the survey that the very last week of September is when we're going to have the next rebooting Web of Trust in San Francisco. Microsoft has agreed to host. So, you know, people can start keeping in their heads that if they would like to participate in the next one to really sort of, you know, drive getting, you know, a lot of these things finished, getting new, you know, final specifications written, et cetera, that the last week of September will be the next one in San Francisco.
Great, awesome. And I dropped the link to the W3C blockchain workshop. And I guess, do you have a link to the Rebooting Web of Trust one, Christopher, that we could put in IRC as well, if you could get that? That would be great. Any questions on the Rebooting Web of Trust workshop or kind of the work that happened there related to the stuff that we're doing here? Okay, we have 7 minutes left. Christopher, if you could spend 3 minutes on the Vermont legal work, and then we'll spend 4 minutes on update on work items.
Sure. So Vermont in the House and Senate passed Bill H-868. That's called the Blockchain Enabling. Well, the bill is a large bill, but it's that particular section is called Blockchain Enabling. Some really important key quotes in that section. It basically says that blockchain technology is any mathematically secured, chronological, and decentralized consensus ledger, whether maintained by an internet interaction, peer-to-peer network, or otherwise. That's an important legal definition, which basically allows for, you know, both Bitcoin-type blockchains and other blockchains. They're basically saying a digital record electronically registered in that blockchain shall be considered self-authenticating. That's a word that comes from previous digital signature legislation, which basically means that this can be considered a record of conducted business activity. And it basically is saying, you know, if you have a factor record verified on a blockchain, the date and time of the record can be considered the date and time of the fact, and that provided that the that you can make know who the person is that recorded that record. There are some caveats here. Of course, you know, the Vermont bill does not say anything about the validity of the truthfulness of that record, only that the date and time, can't be, basically it's reversing the burden of proof on this. And it doesn't have, it doesn't require the state government to use this at this particular point, but It does say, I like this one at the very end, the legality or authorization for any particular underlying activity whose practices or data are verified through the application of blockchain technology. So that means if later the government says, well, we don't like Bitcoin, and you put your proofs on Bitcoin, your proofs are still valid. Just because the blockchain might have been used for something else, it will not invalidate the proofs. So it's fundamentally about proof of publication. I've met the guy who helped draft it. I'm trying to recruit him to talk with some other political people about getting similar things added. And I would love to, you know, if I was to do it one thing differently, which would be the format as per an international standard.
Great. Thank you, Christopher. Okay, we're going to move quickly to an update on the work items. I apologize for only leaving 5 minutes on this. I want to reiterate to the group that this group is not going to become about blockchain. It just so happens that we had a number of events kind of packed back-to-back that talked about it. So for those of you that have been participating in this group for the last 2.5 years, this is just kind of a heads up to all these things that are going on, and they just happen to be all about blockchain. So we're trying to concentrate it into a single call and then get back to working on our specs in the next couple of weeks. Update on work items. Dan Burnett, would you mind going, since there was a big discussion on the mailing list about something related to the verifiable claims data model, and then just give us a general update on the verifiable claims data model?
Sure. We don't really have time to discuss the topic that came out on the list. I just want to say quickly, I posted a link to the document. Major changes, I mean, you can read the email that I sent that lists the changes, but probably the main ones are there's a JWT example now in the JSON section. There's also I renamed credential to be TBD credential because we didn't decide what the prefix was going to be in front of credential, so it's just sitting there waiting for us to decide that. That's probably the biggest item aside from review that still needs to happen. I do intend to update the JSON-LD examples to be either real or closer to real than they currently are. And then there's some other stuff like the introduction. I took a look at writing that and still haven't decided which how I want to go there, because we need to say what the document's about, but as we've discussed, not go too far, right, in making people think that this is a decision, right? This is just some ideas. Again, there's a big topic on the list. We can discuss that some other time and continue on the list.
Okay, great. I'm going to run through. Charter has not been updated. Use cases got several hours of work done on it at the design workshop this past weekend, and so there are changes to that pending. We have not updated the FAQ. The verifiable claims data model specification, we got an update of that from Dan just now. Survey results is in a holding pattern, but we have found someone to update that document and produce it. We still need someone to write a one-page summary for the W3C advisory committee reps. The architecture document got a tremendous amount of work this past weekend at the design workshop. And we have not done an implementer summary yet. Shane has a question in IRC about the use cases. This is a group of 6 people at the design workshop that have never had contact with this group that did a review of the use cases. They are polishing off their suggested changes to the use cases documents, and they will get them to you, Shane, in the next 2 weeks or so. Just to be clear, the reason we're doing this work is we have about a month before we need to put this in front of the web payments interest group and then potentially push it to the W3C for a vote. So these items that I just listed off are part of the voting package that we're going to put in front of W3C. We basically have the first three weeks of June to get it done. Okay. Sorry that the call was so packed today, and I'm sorry that we can't do wrap up. We're out of time. Thank you, everyone, for the call. We'll see everyone again next week on Tuesday at 11 a.m., same channel and time. Thanks, all. Bye.